You're listening to the Packernet Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Packernet Podcast. I am your host and resident panelist, as always, Ryan Schlipp. Check us out online, packernet.com. Find me on Twitter, pack_data. I want so desperately to just not do this segment. It's one of those things where I know I'm probably going to delete this like 500 times. I'm going to say stuff I wish I didn't say. After I say it, I'm going to be like, you should have just ignored it, man. You just keep it light, man. People just want to tune in on a Saturday, and it's light and happy and fluffy, and we just talk Packers and Bears suck and ha 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 ha. But I can't. And then I try to talk like, well, just say I got to say what I got to say. And that's just, I've always kind of been that way, and that's what we're going to do. I'm going to try to calm down a little bit. And then I think what I'm going to do for the sake of transitioning into being something a little bit more light is we'll probably take a break real early. So I'm going to get it off my chest, we'll take a break, and we'll move on. That's the plan, and I'm going to do... We'll see how it goes. But I want to talk about this Richard Sherman situation for a second. I wouldn't feel the need to do it if I wasn't so disgusted with all the comments I'm seeing on social media. And it's not disgusting in the way that you probably think, in the way that all the comments say, oh, I can't believe these comments. I would say 90% of the comments that I'm seeing are vehemently and violently in defense of Richard Sherman and what he did. And the key buzzword here is mental health. Mental health, mental health, mental health. And I'm going to be honest, and I know this is going to sound insensitive, but I don't want to hear about mental health in this instance at all. I don't care. And I'm really sick to death of people running out there trying to score social points by acting all up, tolerant and accepting of people with mental health issues because it's a big buzzword today. And really, that's all social media is, especially Twitter, and it's kind of annoying and boring. But at this particular point in time, considering the circumstances, I can't just brush it off as, man, people on social media are stupid. I can't brush it off. I'm so glad that you're a very compassionate person. That's very good. I'm happy. But what bothers me is that it seems like we don't actually have a moral compass anymore. We don't have this just natural instinct that tells us when things are right and when things are wrong. And so we have to rely on these rules that get made up. And one of the most important moral rules right now is that mental health is the most important thing in the world. And if somebody's having issues, they need to be, they can't be blamed for anything they did. They need to be sympathized with. They need to be helped. Let me tell you the priority that I have in the Richard Sherman situation. Getting him help is on the list, but it's not the top of the list. Richard Sherman is the aggressor in this story. There are victims in this story, and that is my number one priority. The number one priority that I have is the safety, the security, and the well-being of the people that he violently attacked. The second on my list is what's called justice. That would be the point at which we hand down a judgment on Richard Sherman for what he did, and mental health is not an excuse. Mass murderers clearly have something wrong with their brain. Guess what? You still have to pay a price for what you did. Number three is get Richard Sherman help. Here's the reason that I'm the most upset, though, and I can't stop thinking about this, and it is the most absolutely heartbreaking thing in the world, and it just feels like nobody gives a crap. Richard Sherman has two little kids. He has two adorable little kids. He has a 6-year-old son, Raiden, and a 5-year-old daughter named Avery. Those children were inside the house and had to watch as their family barricaded the door, hoping that Richard Sherman, their father, wouldn't break in because they were scared of what would happen if he got in. They had to watch their grandfather arm himself with a gun to protect their family from their father as he stood outside saying, "I'm going to kill myself," and threaten the family, and actually got into an altercation, I believe, with the grandfather or the uncle or whatever. Can you imagine for any amount of... Can you just take 2 seconds to think about the freaking kids and how much trauma they went through before you gush all over Richard Sherman and what a hero he is for what he did, for being an absolute drunk a-hole, for being a piece of garbage? I don't care what you're going through. You get drunk and attack your family with your kids sitting there? Yeah, you better figure it out. Not because I feel bad for you, but because if you ever do something like that again, speaking as though I were the parent in this situation, I'll kill you myself. You do that to my kids again. Hearing those pleas and those screams on the 911 call and the audacity of people to say, "Oh, the white, she said that he didn't do anything wrong." Did you hear them screaming in terror as he tried to bust down the door? Why are you doing this? Why are you making these excuses? Well, because mental health, because mental health, mental health, mental health, because mental health. And I don't need to be lectured on my mental health. If you spent months locked up in a hospital for your mental health, you can come talk to me. Otherwise, I don't need your help. I know all about it. I've had problems with it my whole life. I don't make excuses. Not once have I ever made an excuse for any of my actions because of mental health. And I made a lot of bad ones. Every single decision I made was my decision. What he did was disgusting. It was horrifying. And he needs to spend the rest of his life making it up to his family. I want to know what led up to it. Do you? Who cares? That wasn't a swipe at one of my comments on Twitter, by the way. I've seen other people say that as a defense of Richard Sherman. I don't care. I can't stop thinking about the kids and what they witnessed, what they went through, and what they're going through. I've been through some stuff as a kid, man. I've been through some stuff. I don't think I've ever been through anything quite like that. I've had to hear my brother yell from the other room, "He stabbed her." I don't think I've ever been through anything quite like this. I don't need your help in explaining these things and understanding these things. I don't need to be educated. I don't need anything from you. I'm here to tell you to knock it off. Richard Sherman is not a victim. If he has problems, he needs to get it fixed. That is his obligation. That is his responsibility. It was his responsibility prior to this situation. He's not the victim. And he's deserving of every bit of scorn that he gets. And it absolutely breaks my heart to go on social media and see nothing but how dare you say that Richard Sherman did anything wrong. Just stomping all over these kids. Nobody gives a crap about the actual victims in this story. The trauma and horror that his wife went through. It's disgusting. But because somebody on social media told you that mental health is the most important thing in the world, and if you can be compassionate toward mental health, then you're a good person. And that's what I'm talking about. Where is your actual moral compass that tells you, wait a minute, despite the fact that I've been told this thing, my heart is absolutely broken for these kids, and I can't say that. That doesn't exist anymore. Do we not have just a general moral compass inside of our body that just guides us? That just tells us what's right and wrong? We don't even have that. Is it just completely dead in our society now? We can't look at these in the eyes of these two kids and have any feeling of sadness? We need to be guided by what our society says about mental health? Well, I don't know. I don't feel anything. I just do what I'm told. I was told that if I say this, then I'm a good person. So that's what I'm going to say. No. You're on the wrong side of this situation. Yeah, I know. Depression and sadness and anxiety. You have it and I have it and everybody has it. You know what else you have? You have an obligation to be a good human being, regardless of how sad you are or how anxious you are or whatever kind of problems you have. You still have an obligation to function as a normal person in society. There are still rules and laws that apply to everybody. And it's on you to figure out how to navigate that. And if you're having a hard time with that, you better figure it out. Because if you cross the line, you're guilty. And if you get drunk and drive in a car and smack into a kid and you end their life, you're not going to get off because I had a bad day and I've been sad. You go to jail for the rest of your life and you earned it. You deserved it. How about some compassion for Raiden and Avery? How about that? How about we worry about their mental health and how they're doing because of the trauma that was caused by Richard Sherman, their father? How about we make that our priority? These comments just absolutely disgust me. I understand you're trying to be compassionate, but you're being compassionate to the wrong people. Nobody should have to go through that. His wife shouldn't have had to go through that. His father-in-law shouldn't have had to do that, to barricade the door and arm himself with a gun to protect his family from Richard Sherman. Nobody should have to do that. And so again, my number one priority is the well-being of his family. Not him, his family, the people that he just damaged. Number two is justice. He has to pay consequences for those actions because what he did is completely unacceptable, regardless of the reason. People in their right state of mind don't do things like this. That's assumed. Everybody that breaks the law, everybody that kills people, that attacks people, that rapes people, that does all these things, they're all a little messed up in the head. That's a secondary issue. That's a tertiary issue. Our number one thing is taking care of the victims, punishing you for your actions, and then we'll worry about how do we make sure that you don't ever do that again. Not because I feel bad for you, because you're a piece of crap, but because I need to make sure that society is safe from you. We need to fix you. So yes, I absolutely wish the best for everybody. And to an extent, that means Richard Sherman. But the number one priority is his family, and especially his children, who are completely innocent victims in this. They shouldn't have to go through anything other than having a dad that just loves them unconditionally. And I cannot fathom how traumatizing that was. Even if they were, I don't know if they were, it doesn't matter if they were even there, maybe they were asleep, it doesn't matter. That happened. That's a reality. Hard to believe that they wouldn't be with their mom. Even harder to believe that if they were there, they slept through it. But even so, this is horrifying. He needs to get better for his kids. It's not about getting better for himself so he can have a happy life. We're past that. I'm just sitting here staring at a picture of these. I'm telling you, these kids, skin's a little bit darker, but they are identical twins to my kids. My two kids are the same age. They got the same tight curls, about the same hair length, same exact size. These kids look identical to my kids, and that maybe is making it even a little bit more hard for me to get through this story. But regardless, that's where our compassion needs to be. Number one, Raiden and Avery. That's it. As a society, that's who we should be rallying around. Not Richard. Raiden and Avery. Those are their names. Anyways, like I said, we'll take an early break. It's hard. It's always hard to transition from this kind of stuff into more lighthearted, who cares football stuff. But you gotta do what you gotta do, man. It's certainly not my first time around the bush. I don't know why we're going around a bush, but it is what it is. We'll take a break, and we'll be right back.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
5-1-0, declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, so again, I wanted to get that out of the way, or I probably could have saved that till the end, but whatever. So we're going to kind of start fresh with what we usually do, going over general news and notes and those kinds of things and work our way through. But I did, I've been kind of sitting on this for a while, but I want to clear my board a little bit. And I just realized what your Twitter handle is. I don't know if I can say that. I don't know, John. Anyways, John Peligro says, he asked his first comment, actually, and this is from a few days ago, but he said, take a look at the 1991 Packers roster. Apart from Sterling Shepard, it was hardly Sterling Shepard, listen to me, Sterling Sharp, it was hardly stellar. But I think when I went through the list of wide receivers, my point was at least one really dominant wide receiver. So that as long as Sterling was there and healthy and playing well, we're still counting it. Because, I mean, technically today you could say it's Devontae and who, right? So back then it was Sterling and who. Still had Sterling, though. But anyways, he also says, is there any interest in Euro Soccer Championship in that neck of the woods? This is a pretty broad audience. And I do forget that a lot. And it is fun anytime I get an excuse to go look at it, so I want to look at it really quickly. So again, obviously the United States makes up, in the last month, 92% of the total listenership. However, we did have, you know, hundreds of people from the UK, from Australia, from Germany, from Sweden, from Brazil, from Mexico, from Puerto Rico, Ireland, Denmark, Switzerland. So lots of places, and a lot of places in Europe, South America, Central America, Mexico, and North America. Big soccer areas, right? I will speak for I can't necessarily speak for all Americans, obviously, but I have never really known at any point in my life any pockets of big soccer fans, right? So, for example, you'll have in Wisconsin, it's all Packers. Right now, you get a lot of Bucks and some Brewers fans, a little bit more so because they're successful, but it's all NFL. Now, if you leave this area, it's always weird to me because I feel like everybody's just obsessed with the NFL. But like if you go down to the South, for example, there's a lot of areas where college football is actually really, really popular. Other areas, it might be baseball. I think like out in LA, you've got basketball, baseball. You know, different regions have different things. I don't know of any area in which soccer is real big. I know if you go on Twitter, you have some people that are into soccer. I think most of them, I shouldn't speak for them. I did enough yelling at people earlier in the podcast, so I'll just leave it be. But I see a little bit of it. It always surprises me. But like, for example, I've never heard it come up once on when I was out at a job site, and I work almost, you know, most of my jobs is just working with dudes who are into sports. I never knew a guy that was like a big soccer buff. But I'm really not anti-soccer. There is a good amount of anti-soccer sentiment. It's just a fun thing, right? Like being anti-French. I don't really care. I don't even know people from France. It's just kind of a fun thing that you say sometimes when you're goofing around. But in reality, I don't dislike it at all. In fact, hockey and soccer, I think, are very similar, and I kind of like them for the same reason. I think basketball and baseball I find extremely boring. They're very popular American sports. I don't really like them. I think when you get into the championship stuff like the Bucks right now, especially when you have a rooting interest, it's extremely exciting. The problem is if you're talking about a team that is, let's say Brewers in 1998, right? Nobody cares. They're not good. And it's like, you know, game 50 or something. The game means nothing. There's a billion games and scoring a run, it doesn't mean anything. And so for me, it's really hard to get into. The thing that I really like about soccer, and again, hockey is kind of similar, it's always kind of edge of your seat because there's always, even though there's almost no scoring, right? It's kind of like baseball and stuff where it's real low scoring, but baseball is just kind of like, and then when something happens, it's like, whoa, look at that, home run, that's crazy. Soccer is always like, right? Because you're just always around the net. And I think hockey even more so because they're always just kind of lingering in that. I haven't watched hockey in forever, and I almost never watch soccer, but I think soccer is one of those sports where if I decided to get into it, I think I can get super into it. I really do. Plus, there's such rabid fan bases. When I watch, sometimes I'll just go on YouTube, and I know it's some of the craziest ones are actually like Euro basketball or something, whatever. But I've watched YouTubes about the craziest fan bases and how wild and out of control they get with like the flares and the flags and stuff. And you listen to the energy and the chants, and it's like, dude, we suck over here. You know, I mean, you go to a Packers game and you can't even stand up without getting yelled at. Dude, over there, and I know it's probably not every club, and I don't want to speak like I know what I'm talking about because I don't, but I watch what you guys do over there sometimes, and it's like, we have got to step up our game. Like, we need the Packers to be doing that stuff. You know, like, we got to get a song, first and foremost. I mean, we do have Roll Out the Barrel, but that's not exactly what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, like, war chants. Dude, I watch it just to get jacked up. I'm serious. Go on YouTube. I don't know if the audio is going to be quite as good, but it's crazy, dude. Like, I watch it just to get jacked up, just because it gets you jacked up. Here, check it out. I fully understand that's never going to happen because our sports are largely family friendly, right? You can bring your kids to an event, right? It's the demographics are not the same. Let's just call it what it is. That scene, that is 99.9% men in the age range of like 16 to 35. So unless Lambo turns into that, we probably won't have flares and chants and fun stuff. But at least I can bring my son, so it's a trade-off. But I am saying, I don't know very much about soccer and, football. Sorry. And I'm not even sure how this whole thing works. I'm looking at this, and it's World's Best Football Ultras chant. So I don't know if, like, ultras were the crazy people. I don't know how any of this stuff works. I don't even know what that word means. I know nothing. But I do know that if I was in Europe or South America, I would probably be, hooligan, I think it's called. Speaking of bad decisions, I 100% would be one of those guys. It just seems like fun, dude. I got to go to Europe and get involved. I don't want to go to the super crazy ones. I was looking at, I found one of the YouTube videos where it got a little intense. Like, for example, the Oakland Raiders and their fans would be like a really tame version of a lot of these groups. It's just straight up not safe. Like, not safe to be in some of these places. I think one of them is down in South America is kind of, I don't want to say run by, but it was bought by one of the big cartel guys, and it gets a little crazy. But anyways, if you're into soccer and feel like, who cares what you call it? I'm going to call it soccer because that's what I call it, and feel the need to educate me, you can feel free to do so because I think I need to pick a club. And again, I literally know zero things. I know there's like different things, you know, like, what do you call it? Leagues or whatever. I don't know. I'm telling you, I know nothing, but I want to. And just, if you want to sell me on your team, that's fine. Just show me a video of your chant and that's where we're going to get started. See, and that's the other thing. Like, I want to pick a team based on coolest chant. What do you pick a football team based on? Like the colors, like, oh, purple's cool. Like, get out of here. That's why I like the Oilers. Thought the Oilers were cool because I like that powder blue. So stupid. We're so stupid over here. We don't have any cool stuff. By the way, if you think that's crazy, check out European or Euro basketball or whatever. There's a video, Basketball Fans and Atmosphere, USA versus Europe. It's freaking hilarious. Maybe that'll get me into basketball. I got to watch some European basketball. I also get the impression, and tell me if I'm wrong, but it's usually the really bad teams that have the craziest fans because you got nothing else going on. I mean, European basketball is, I can't imagine they're that good. But why would anybody go? You know what else? We can blend this into something else we've talked about. We talked about how Washington needs to embrace sort of that bad boy image so they can be the heel. Maybe teams like this, teams like the Chargers who can't fill stadiums, maybe you start going the hooligan route, right? The Raiders are already there, although they're leaving L.A. and going to Las Vegas. I don't know if that's going to carry over or how that works, but, you know, I mean, just ease into it. Encourage people to bring in some massive flags, you know, like entirely oversized. I don't even know what you call them. They're not flags. They're like giant banners that stretch across the whole field. And sometimes they're like people, you know, like marionettes the size of skyscrapers. And they just raise it up to make fun of one of the other opposing players or something. Like, how did you build it? Where did that come from? What is that? I don't know. You guys are nuts, man. I need to know more, though. Anyways, another NFL news. We did have one player who got a long-term extension that was on the franchise tag. That's always a big thing. There's a deadline. You sign him to a tag, but you always try to get a long-term deal worked out. Nobody did except Mr. Taylor Moten, which makes sense. The guy's a fantastic player. The Carolina Panthers don't have a lot going on. They don't have obviously they got Christian McCaffrey. But it's not like they've got a ton of guys where you can't pay one of the better tackles in football. Taylor Moten's fantastic. If they didn't come to an extension with him, that would have been really, really pathetic. So they did. $72 million deal. Congratulations to Mr. Taylor Moten. Some other news. Travis Kelce apparently is no longer Travis Kelce. He is Travis Kelce. I brought this up, and a lot of people are doubting it. And they're doubting it largely because my initial post on Twitter was, so, and remember, Tonyan and Kelce they're kind of intertwined, right? They're buddies. They work out together sometimes, whatever. They intermingle. But Tonyan became Tonyan. Now Kelce is Kelce. I'm just saying, maybe they're messing with us. No, I was kind of joking. I know the backstory behind Tunyon, and I do think Kelsey's telling the truth. But anyways, here is Kelsey explaining that his name is not Kelsey. And although he has apparently referred to himself as Kelsey and all these other things, he says he just kind of went along with it because everyone just kept calling him it. But here is the audio of and the proof, so to speak, of what I'm talking about.
It's I got Kelsey and then Kels. My real name is Kels, so I mean, I just kind of roll with the punches.
You know, it's kind of funny because I had somebody reach out to me and explain to me that it's not Yash Nijman, like I've been calling him. It's Yash Nijman, I believe is how you pronounce his name. And I kind of was upset by it, although I shouldn't have been, because it's like, oh, good, I was sounding like an idiot, and now I can actually sound like I know what I'm talking about and know how to pronounce Packers names on a Green Bay Packers podcast because I'm a professional and I know how to do my job. But in reality, it's like, you're just making my life harder, man, because I'm never going to remember. It's because it always he's like, well, isn't it easier to say Nijman than Nijman? It is, but you know what? It's not easier than saying Nijman, whatever. I call him whatever I want because that's what I do. Same with Tanyan. And I play that game for 5 minutes. Just let me be wrong, right? Matt Corral. I mean, Corral. I keep calling him Corral. And I got to give a 5-minute explanation every time. Just let me be wrong. But then I can't even, because if I just let myself be wrong, even if I explain it to you, somebody's going to listen having not heard me explain that I'm just saying it, and they're going to be like, this guy's an idiot. He doesn't even know how to say it. He says he loves Matt Corral, but he doesn't even know his name is Matt Corral. He calls him Matt Corral. He's a dummy. No, I know. I just want to say it wrong. Like Mekhi Becton. I know it's Mekhi Becton. I like Mekhi Becton. It sounds better. I want to call him Mekhi Becton. So I don't know. Now it's Kelsey, I mean Kels, or whatever. So what is it with football player names? I've never experienced this with anything else. I mean, I guess it's because people tell you their names. It's not like you read it and say it wrong. I don't know, man. But even the easy ones, it's like, I don't know. It's Kelsey and Tanyan. I don't know what to tell you. Anyways, moving on from that. There's also news, big-time news. Xavien Howard, defensive back, cornerback for the Miami Dolphins, apparently is really not happy with his situation. And, of course, our first reaction is he's leaving. He's going to find a new team. They need to trade him. In reality, what usually happens in these situations is he says, hey, I'm not being paid enough, and I'm not happy, and he stirs up as much mud as he possibly can to cause the Miami Dolphins to panic and pay him a bunch of money, and that's probably what's going to happen. However, I thought I'd bring it up because even though nobody's mentioned it for the Green Bay Packers, like usually happens, and it makes sense because we probably don't need him, but I would assume somebody out there, knowing Xavien Howard was sort of, it was basically 1A and 1B as far as PFF grades go between Jaire Alexander and Xavien Howard, and I could possibly see somebody out there saying, I understand Eric Stokes, but he's probably going to need a year to get under the, you know, to figure it out anyways. What if we gave him a 1-year deal? And then we get the number one and number two. Nobody said that, so I'm guessing nobody's thinking that, and I would say that that's a very bad idea. We have no money. We can't do it. And we, you know, whatever. However, I did want to mention the possibility, and let me just read this real quick. NFL Network's Mike Silver reports, quote, there's a lot of trade chatter concerning Dolphins cornerback Xavien Howard. Per Silver, Howard remains unhappy with his contract and wants a new, improved deal despite having 4 years left on his current one after inking a 5-year, $75.25 million extension 2 off-seasons ago. Howard skipped the Dolphins' mandatory minicamp last month and isn't thrilled that he makes less than teammate cornerback Byron Jones after Howard led the NFL with 10 interceptions last season. Jones had 2. And is widely regarded as one of the league's top cover men in a class alongside Jalen Ramsey. Ramsey signed a 5-year, $100 million extension prior to week one last year as the league's highest paid corner at $15.05 million per year. Howard is the 6th highest paid player at his position, trailing Ramsey, Marlon Humphrey, Tre'Davious White, Darius Slay, and teammate Jones. According to Silver, it'll take a first-round pick and more to land Howard, and several teams are said to be considering the move. The reason I'm bringing it up is because despite the fact that the Packers are entirely out of this race, I think you could reasonably make an argument for every single other NFC North team, because the NFC North, absent the Packers, is so cornerback starved, it's unbelievable. So unbelievably cornerback starved. Now, let's just start with the Bears. The big signing for them after having lost basically all their corners when was Desmond Trufant. Desmond Trufant completely and totally fell off a cliff last year. Just completely and totally fell off a cliff. If you look at his grades, started off in the 80s and then was basically 70s for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Last year, 38.4 overall grade. Now, fair to note, he didn't play all year. Also fair to note, he was a Detroit Lion, so it's just kind of where players go to die. But it was horrific. He had one game against Minnesota where he graded out well. Every other game was, let's see, his highest game was a 50. He was terrible. But Desmond Trufant, who is 30 years old, is now a Chicago Bear. That was their big acquisition. Otherwise, they have Mr. Jalen Johnson, who is going into his second year. Possible that he takes a step. He was a second-round pick, so we'll see what happens there, but not super promising. He ranked 84th out of 121 corners last year with a 55 overall grade. And then in the slot, they've got Duke Shelley going into his third year. He did not have a second-year bump. In fact, he regressed in 2020. Again, he also didn't play the whole year, but, you know, it doesn't mean you got better. If you were injured and then you came back and you didn't play well, I can't really give you bonus points for that. That's actually called two strikes, but whatever. He's also a sixth-round pick, so you kind of got to temper your expectations. Now, you could make a reasonable case for the Bears when you consider Khalil Mack is still on the team. He was PFF's number one-ranked edge rusher last year. Again, very talented pass rusher, although the stats have gone down, but also a dominant run defender. Akeem Hicks, I've said, is wildly overrated, but he's still a good player. You've got Robinson probably for one more year, and you've got a rookie quarterback. The desperation of the Chicago Bears is unbelievably evident. However, there is one glaring issue here. Does anybody know what that glaring issue would be? The glaring issue is, as always, the Chicago Bears felt the need to trade away their first-round pick. The Bears don't have a 2022 first-round pick. They also don't have a fourth-round pick. They have a second, third, fifth, sixth, seventh. Now, that isn't to say they couldn't trade away a 2023, but that's not worth a first-round pick. It's not the same thing as a 2022 first. I don't know exactly how the value works itself out, but it's not the same. Just because first-round pick is in the name doesn't mean it's the same thing as a 2022 first-round pick. So again, another situation where there's a really good potential move that you can make, except you can't make it. Now, maybe you give up a second round this year and a second round next year. You figure something out, but, and again, that's the kind of desperation move I would expect from the Bears, because you look at it and say, okay, now you don't have a first and or a second or a fourth or a 2023 second, and you got to figure out how to pay the guy. So although I could absolutely see why this would be a fantastic situation for a team that is desperate to win, not that I think it would be the right move, because I still don't think, unless Justin Fields absolutely pops off, I still think there's too many holes and there's too many issues. And they got a brand spanking new defensive coordinator again with just a hodgepodge of players on top of a rookie that needs to learn stuff, brand new corners that need to learn stuff. I mean, all new guys. I mean, the entire defense has to relearn defense. But since our goal is all in now, I guess. Now, you could look at the Detroit Lions also. The Lions are actually a little bit more intriguing to me. Now, it's a little bit early because they're clearly not a Super Bowl contender today. However, they are building and they're building the right way, and that's through the draft. Now, that isn't to say that you can't go out and find somebody to pay, and maybe this is one of those big-time swings that you make if you give them a long-term deal. Now, you've got Jeffrey Okuda, who you really desperately hope steps up, and on the opposite side of Jeffrey Okuda, and I know you have Arawarie, but the guy doesn't seem to be very good. Granted, Okuda wasn't either, but whatever. He's a fifth-round pick. We don't expect all that much, and there's also always the slot if need be. So now we've got a much-improved offensive line. We've got Hockenson. We've got Swift. We're probably going to be drafting a quarterback next year, so we're going to have a quarterback and a guy that we're not going to be paying all that much. We've got a dominant cornerback duo and a decent defensive line, although we're going to need to start replacing some of these guys because they're kind of getting old and expensive and whatever else. But it's got the makings of a really good team that is largely built through the draft, except for one really critical piece. It's also a veteran that's going to come in and help us train up Mr. Okuda, which is a desperately important. We took him number 3 overall. So it's really important that we hit on that one. So I actually think, although it seems silly, because, I mean, what are you going to do with the guy? It's a complete waste. Again, assuming we're giving him a long-term contract and we plan on him being here a while, I think it could make a lot of sense. Then you've got the Minnesota Vikings, who possibly make the most sense. However, the biggest problem is that they've already gone out and got a bunch of guys. Now, I don't think anybody that they got can touch Xavien Howard. Again, I know Patrick Peterson's a big name. He hasn't really done much since 2018, and in the last 4 years, that was his only good year. If you just look at his ranks in the last 4 years, 57th, 5th, 41st, and 83rd this past year, the guy's 31 years old. He just hasn't been as dominant recently. Now, maybe he comes to Minnesota. They've got a great defensive system and all that, and it all works out, and maybe he's real good. I don't know. But, you know, whatever. Bashaud Breeland, I know I'm barking up the wrong tree. Packer fans love the guy. They're mad at the Packers forever letting him go. But his ranks in his entire career since 2014, 99th, 19th, that was his one good year, 83rd, 59th, 99th, 93rd, and 57th. This guy is a quality backup, and he's had some, I know he had a big play or two in the playoffs when the Chiefs ended up winning the Super Bowl. He was an impactful guy, but again, on a down-to-down basis, it has not been all that spectacular. You got Mackenzie Alexander, who was a second-round pick. Again, the biggest issue is they've invested a lot. They've invested a lot in young guys that they're hoping come up. They've invested a lot in veterans that are going to fill in a short-term need now. But again, I do think their cornerback group is lacking. I think Vikings fans would disagree. They're looking at Peterson and Breeland and a bunch of young guys saying they got a bunch of studs everywhere. I just tend to disagree. However, I think if they went out and got Xavien Howard, who was arguably the best corner in football last year, and I don't know that I would agree with it, but he's close. And you pair that with, again, Hunter and Pearson Richardson up front, and you got Kendricks at linebacker, and you got Smith at safety. You've got an improving offensive line. You got Cousins, who is a quality quarterback. You got Cook, who's one of the better running backs. You got Jefferson and Thielen at wide receiver. You got Smith at tight end. I mean, it really is just the one piece. And maybe it's not a piece that's missing. Again, if Peterson can step up and Breeland can continue to just be that serviceable number two guy, and Alexander and maybe some of these guys, maybe they've just got a dynamite team from top to bottom and they tear it up. But you could see where that would make sense. I don't think they're going to, again, because they've invested so much already. But I do think I'm not even saying I would do it because I understand how stupid it would look based on the moves that we've made, but I do think it could be a thing that puts them over the hump. So for all three of those teams, I could see it making sense. The Vikings do have a first-round pick if they wanted to give it up. I honestly don't think he's going to cost a first-round pick. I could be wrong, but that would be a little bit surprising. They do have a first, and they do have a second. They're going to lose either a third or a fourth because of Yannick, which is hilarious to me. The Lions do have a first. In fact, I believe they have two first-round picks because of that Matthew Stafford trade. They gave up Stafford. They got Goff. They got a 2021 third. They got a 2022 first. They got a 2023 first. The Lions, man, if they can just keep making good moves, I don't ever want them to be a good team. I like that they're the little brother of the NFC North that everybody just kind of pats on the head and sends on his way. But they're in a really good position right now, and I really hope they mess it up. Some kind of big news. The Saints defensive tackle, David Onyemata, was suspended 6 games for a violation of the NFL's PED policy. This is pretty big, man. David Onyemata is, as I said, a Saint, and the Green Bay Packers play the Saints in Week 1, so obviously I can do some math here. If he's gone for the first 6 weeks, I think he won't be playing against the Packers. Here is that report via Ian Rappaport.
The Saints received some bad news for their defense on Friday as David Onyemata, one of the underrated players in the NFL and one of the best players and most disruptive players on this Saints defense, revealed on Instagram that he tested positive for a banned substance that would not be on the field when the 2021 season began. A couple hours later, it was revealed that Onyemata was officially suspended 6 games for a PED violation, which means the player who started 30 games over the past 2 seasons is going to be simply watching when it all begins. Now, Onyemata, who is 1 year into a 3-year, $26 million contract, did put out a statement on Instagram saying he has never knowingly taken anything that could cause a positive test. He is in the process of testing his supplements, but of course, he takes responsibility for his actions.
Now, Ian mentioned how he's one of the more underrated players, and I don't think that he's wrong. Now, it's possible this was just kind of a fluke year because it's year 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but he seemingly had a pretty big breakout year. He played the whole year and ended up with nearly a 90 overall grade. He had 49 pressures on 428 attempts, so he's a little bit over that 10% mark. He had 7 sacks, 10 hits, and 32 hurries. Also had a 76.5 run defense grade on the season. And if we look at the team in general, I mean, this is a pretty dominant group up front. You got Cam Jordan. So Cam Jordan was the 8th ranked pass rusher in football. David Onyemata was the 7th ranked defensive tackle. You've got Marcus Davenport, who ranked 20th off the edge last year, which is pretty solid. And then they invested another first-round pick in Peyton Turner, who is a defensive tackle. So you've got 4 guys, potentially, that are really, really dominant, on top of a really talented linebacker in DeMario Davis. You've got Malcolm Jenkins, who's also really talented as a linebacker. You've got Marcus Williams, who is a really talented safety. So the middle of this defense is just impossible. And so week one coming into this with this group of guys, not that it's perfect. The corners I don't think are all that great, but just especially the defensive line with that linebacker in there, it makes you nervous. Depending on how good Turner is week one, this is one of the scarier defensive lines in football. However, with Onyemata out and Turner being a rookie and we're not really sure what he's going to be able to produce, now all of a sudden it goes from a really talented team, choking over here, to a questionable interior defensive line. Presumably Shy Tuttle will be the next in line to take over. Another relatively talented guy, I believe an undrafted free agent, but he's not Onyemata. And so that certainly is a blow, especially for a team that's going to need the defense to really step up. I mean, with the quarterback situation in such flux, they can't really rely on Drew Brees taking over and just dominating this game. They need to trust that the offense is going to have those explosive, you know, periods. They've got a really talented offensive mind in their head coach who comes up with some creative stuff. So we're going to see both quarterbacks and the big arm from Winston, the athleticism and the creativity with Taysom Hill, and whatever kind of stuff they can pull out of the book to get this win. But they're still going to need the defense to step up, because if you can't get at least a few stops against the Green Bay Packers, it's not going to matter, because you're not going to have that consistency from your offense. And so that, as I mentioned, is a pretty significant blow for the New Orleans Saints. Anyways, we might as well leave it there. I think that's enough for a Saturday. You folks enjoy your day. As always, I will talk to you tomorrow. Once again, please remember to tell your friends and family about the podcast. If you want to support this podcast directly, you can do so at patreon.com/pack_daddy. Please, please, please do not forget about the Palmer Home for Children charity that I'll be raising money for about 2 more months. I think Labor Day is when this ends. Again, if you go over to my Twitter profile, you see it pinned to the top. If you go to the Packernet Podcast Facebook group, it should be pinned to the top. Or just message me directly and I'll get you set up. But otherwise, you folks have a great day, and I will talk to you tomorrow. Bye-bye.